Great to have you along on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hi, Larry Mueller here as we take a look at stargazing. What's going on in the night sky or the day sky, if you want to talk about that too, with Paul Kinzer. Paul's been with us many a time. He's an active member of the La Crosse Area Astronomy Club, author of the second edition of Stargazing Basics, Getting Started in Recreational Astronomy, published, I believe, by Harvard University Press? Cambridge University Press. I don't have the book in front of me right at the moment. But he's with us to talk about the upcoming Astronomy Day. We'll talk about what's going on in the sky. There's a rare move across the face of the sun this spring. We can talk about that. And certainly take your questions. Join in. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Love to hear from you. And Paul, once again, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
I always love to come.
Well, it's great to have you here, and there are kind of lots of things coming up in the way of events.
Yeah, I think this is a great time of year where the night sky changes as the year goes on, and we go around the sun, and we're transitioning from what's up there in the winter to spring, and even if you get up early or stay up very, very late, depending on how you look at it, the summer skies, too.
So lots going on, and what's the brightest star? Planet in the night sky right now?
Right now it's Jupiter. Right when it gets dark, if you look in the southeastern sky, pretty high up in the sky, will be the brightest star. If you look well to its right, there will be another bright star. Not quite as bright, though. That's the star Sirius. But the really bright one in the southeast, when it gets dark, that's Jupiter.
Jupiter's been up there for a while. It's
And, you know, as we go around the sun every year, each planet is in the sky for several months. Jupiter wasn't in the sky, say, last fall because it was in the sky during the day. But it's up again, and it's prominent, and it's up almost all night long.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. What about those pre-dawn hours? What are we seeing?
At that time, if you get up at your time of day, which I don't, but if you do, prominent very far in the south are the planets Mars and Saturn.
Yeah.
And Mars right now is looking sort of yellowy orange. People call it the red planet. I think it looks a little less red than orange. And it's going to only get brighter because it's going to be as close as it gets to Earth this time around on, let me see, I have the date here, on May 22nd. May 22nd, it reaches what's called opposition, which means it's opposite from the sun in the Earth's sky. And if you think about it, you draw a line from the sun to the Earth to Mars, that would make sense that would be the closest it gets. And Mars is also, it's one of the planets, Mercury is also like this, that has a very elliptical orbit. Its orbit, unlike ours, which is almost a perfect circle, pretty close, its is much more elongated. So every couple of years, as we're going around the sun and it's going around the sun, we catch up to it. But in some years, it's very far from the sun, so it's not as close to us. Well, this year is one of the years that it will be fairly close to us. So through a telescope, you can see much more detail than you typically can.
As the winter rolled along, there were times when I'd have to get out my app on my cell phone to find it because it was, and then I, you know, once I knew exactly where it was, then I could say, okay, there it is.
Yeah, and you shouldn't need that for the next few months because, you know, for Mars, within a couple of months, either side of opposition, it's quite bright. Other times a year, you can barely see it because it is a very small planet. And when it's on the opposite side of the sun from us, it's very far away. And of course, right near it in the sky is Saturn. They're both in the constellation Scorpius, the Scorpion. Another neat thing about Mars, right now, where it is in its orbit, it's very close to the heart of Scorpius. The heart of Scorpius is the star Antares or Antares. And Ant means anti or against, and Aries is the Greek word for Mars, the rival of Mars. And it's called that because it's sort of red, too. So right now in the sky, you can see a pretty bright star, Antares, and a much brighter planet, Mars, close by. And then to Mars's left is the planet Saturn. And it looks a little bit yellowy white. And Saturn is always far away from us. So it's kind of the same size in the sky most of the time because it's always far away. Much, much bigger than Mars, but much, much farther from the sun. So it isn't as bright right now as Mars. However, it is always amazing through a telescope. If you even have a small telescope and you aim it at Saturn, if you haven't done it before, I find pretty much everyone who's never seen it through a telescope before, when they look through my telescope, they make a noise. They make a sound.
That's like, oh my goodness.
They just, wow. So, if you get a chance, do that. Look at them. And, of course, they just look beautiful together up there in the sky.
And they do kind of, well, I'm saying hanging out, but if you find one, the other one's not too far away.
Right, that's right. At least for now. And, of course, Mars and the Earth are zipping around the sun. So Mars moves across our sky pretty quickly.
Talking the stars and spring stargazing with Paul Kinzer. Join in, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@WPR.org or go ahead and post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. We'll get you on pretty quickly. Jeff from Madison asked us to mention that 4-H has an excellent astronomy project, and the kids who participate get access to research-grade 16-inch telescopes from around the world.
Yeah, I don't know a lot about that program. My son is active in 4-H, and we do things with astronomy, and we do things with, 4-H is one of those organizations where there are all sorts of opportunities available, and each club chooses to do different things depending on expertise. And yet, I seem to recall Jeff called in the last time I was here to talk a bit about that program, but that's great. And there are more and more things like that where anybody can work on some pretty decent telescopes online. There are some that are for profit where you can use them to take images, but there are others for public outreach and for research where people of any age can take part.
And our Washburn Observatory, I believe, has just reopened after I should check that out, but I think it's reopened and
okay.
Interesting. Completely remodeled.
There's a website that I frequent called cloudynights.com, which is a very good. It's got all sorts of forums for all levels of astronomy, and there was a post there recently, somebody asking for people to discuss telescopes that were at colleges and schools that are just mothballed because of a lack of interest. And the thread turned into, there were some people would write, there's this wonderful telescope that is just sitting in a storeroom. But then other people said, but here's one that's just come out, or here's one that's being used again, or here's another one that we're working on. So that's good to hear.
Yeah, they've spent a fair amount of money to sort of spruce the place up and take care of things. So that's wonderful.
Yeah, it is.
Darren in Madison, it's your turn. Thanks, Darren, for calling.
Yeah, hi, guys. Thanks for being on. And I just had a question about what your guest recommendation would be for an ideal intro to stargazing telescope. Something that, ideally would be relatively low price, but that would be decent enough to get, a stable image of, detail of the moon, perhaps rings of Saturn. And I don't know if, seeing the rings on Saturn is something that requires a much higher level microscope. I was just kind of wondering,
sure,
something in like under $500 kind of a thing.
Well, okay. Thanks for the price range there, because for under $500, you can get a very, very nice telescope.
Okay,
however,
under $200.
for under $200, you're really going to push it then. The main limiting factor, I believe, for inexpensive telescopes is how sturdily they're mounted. Even if you get one that has a fairly decent optical train, if it bounces all over the place, it's not going to get used much. And to make something very sturdy requires some heft. And frankly, there is no real simple answer to your question. In fact, that's what I wrote a book about. That's
yeah.
the, you know, if you, It depends on where you live. If you live in the city, there isn't really a lot of point in getting a telescope with a really large mirror or lens because, frankly, light pollution won't let you see the dimmer things that will show you.
It would mostly be in rural central Wisconsin or southern Dane County where we're, you know, removed from Madison City Lights to a decent degree.
Right, so you'd be able to see a fair amount. I would say the thing you want to look for, and this is true even in the city most of the time, you want to look for the largest lens or mirror you can afford in a sturdy mount. I guess that's what I'd say. There are refractor telescopes. That's the classic where you look through. There's a lens on the front of the telescope. And then there's a reflector, and that's where there's a mirror at the back end of the telescope. You get the most...
Is there one or the other that would be more advantageous when I'm, you know, looking at only a few $100s?
Yeah, you can get more bang for the buck with the reflector, the mirror one, because they're cheaper to build. The issue, though, is that they take some maintenance. You have to adjust the mirror position so that you get the best views. Where with a refractor, you basically just pick it up, take it outside, and you can look through it. I would say you wouldn't want to get a lens smaller than 80 millimeters or about 3.5 inches across, 3 inches. If you go any smaller than that, you're really limiting what you can see. Because the thing is, the bigger the mirror or lens, the dimmer things you can see, but also the bigger the mirror or the lens, if they're made decently, the sharper the image will be. So those are things to consider.
Any brand name specific you might say to start looking at, like is Celestron even decent?
Well, I hesitate to do that because sadly, even the Celestron is a decent company. Mead is another one. But they sell both really nice telescopes, and they also sell some pretty bad ones. So I think you just have to do some research to check into that. And there are lots and lots of choices out there now, more than there have ever been. There's another company now called Explore Scientific. They are importing, they're pretty much all importing things made in China now. The quality of Chinese telescopes has gone up dramatically in the last 10 or 15 years, so... plenty of good stuff out there.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Yeah, sure. Appreciate it. So under $500, you can get something.
Oh yeah, if you scrounge, I mean, $500 is a, you know, you should think, well, what would I pay for a really nice camera?
Mm-hmm.
And you know, a telescope that is very solid and steady and optically really nice. You know, you should expect to pay a fair amount of money for it.
Absolutely.
And sadly, there are many stores that, $100, wow, that's a lot of money. It ought to be good. And they're not at all. It's not just the optics might not be great or they might be fine, but the quality control and the plastic parts, and they're just not worth getting.
Paul Kinzer, author of Stargazing Basics, Getting Started in Recreational Astronomy. Our guest today. Fun talking with him. You join in with your questions or comments about stargazing, about what's going on in the sky. Love to hear from you. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@WPR.org or go ahead and post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Love to hear from you. I'm Larry Mueller. Jill Nadeau, our on-air producer, here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Right now, having fun talking with Paul Kinzer, author of Stargazing Basics, Getting Started in Recreational Astronomy. You can join in 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@WPR.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. And Paul, you've been doing quite a bit of work in your own community with your school district putting together an observatory, have you not?
That is correct. We're hoping to have it opened for a public open house on May 14th, which this year is Spring Astronomy Day, and we can talk a little bit about that later. But, yeah, there are two piers in there with telescopes on them. One of the telescopes I built, another was donated. And it's going to be very nice. There's still some work to do. I think I have sawdust in my shoes from being out there yesterday. We're building some shelves. We're going to do some painting and electronic sort of getting everything ready to go.
Well, and that's my birthday.
Oh, well, there you go.
There we go.
Yeah.
We have Daniel in Delafield up next with a question. Hi, Daniel. Thanks for calling.
Hey, how are you?
Great. Appreciate the call. What can we do for you?
Well, I've got an older telescope that belonged to my father-in-law. It's about 4 foot long and about 6 to 8 inches in diameter. I have no idea what the power is, but it's been in the box for years and years, and I've been told it doesn't focus. Is there someplace I can take it to get it adjusted or, you know?
To have somebody give you an estimate.
Well, I worked at a summer camp where they said that, and it just turned out that it just needed some very minor adjustments.
Oh.
And I would say your best bet, other than just driving up here right now, is to contact an astronomy club in your area or a university astronomy or physics department. They'll be able to put you in touch. It's my experience that most amateur astronomers really want to help other people get involved. So that would be my bet.
So in Delafield area, there's probably a bet within 30 miles.
Yeah, well, I bet. And if you...
Or 20 even.
Yeah, if you just do an internet search for Astronomy Clubs Wisconsin, you'll probably get lots of things. Another thing to do maybe would be to go to the Astronomical League, which is sort of a clearinghouse of astronomy clubs in the U.S. and other places, and they would also be able to help you.
That's very cool.
Yeah.
Very good. Thank you very much.
Yeah, sure. Thanks, Daniel. Appreciate the call. And let's turn to Brian in Sun Prairie. Brian, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Larry. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure thing.
I have a couple of 4-year-old girls who have been voicing interest in the stars and the moon, and I'm trying to get them more engaged. I tried using some low-powered binoculars, but they get really frustrated because they can't really see through them very well.
Yeah.
And I'm looking for ideas that I can get them stayed engaged and more interested in what's out in the sky.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know if you tried this, but one way to make it easier to look through binoculars is to mount them on a tripod, a regular camera tripod, most even halfway decent binoculars in the front where in the middle there's a little thing you can unscrew and get a very inexpensive adapter to put it on a tripod, and then they don't have to use their hands. They don't have to find the target. You can aim it, and they can just put their eyes up to it. But I agree, kids that age, I work with kids 5 to 10 years old every day, and it's kind of like reading. They can't do it. They can't do it. Oh, and suddenly they can. So it takes some patience. Another thing I've done, if kids really have a hard time looking through binoculars, I have done art projects where we just take a couple of toilet paper tubes and glue them together after decorating them, and then they can kind of practice with those and just get their eyes used to looking through two separate things. Another thing to do, I mean, when you mention the moon, that's great. If you can get access to any telescope, they're going to see so much detail on the moon, it's going to be thrilling. But if they really struggle being able to look through an optical device, then I suggest getting a green laser pointer. You have to be careful because they can be dangerous. And going out and looking at constellations, because then all they have to do is look up. And if you can point to the stars with a laser pointer, a regular red one won't work. The beam is invisible, but a green laser pointer, you can actually see the beam at night, especially if you get away from town. But even in town, you can see it. And look at the Big Dipper and things like that. That's another way to really get them excited.
Since you're in Sun Prairie, the UW Space Place,
yes,
is in Madison on South Park Street. And the UW, if you go to UW Space Place, just type that in. They have public events, and you can. And I've gone with my. I went with my daughter, and it's quite nice. They take you up on the roof and the building at night, and you can view through their telescopes.
Yep. And, cool. Another suggestion is a planetarium. Taking them to a planetarium, which hey, I own one. So.
Yeah, talk about that actually, because you've got a really cool thing going there, Paul.
Yeah, seeing stars. I travel around Wisconsin and anywhere else that somebody would want me with my portable planetarium, and I go to schools, and it's mostly schools and libraries, and I'll just rattle off where I'm going so far this year. In fact, on Saturday, I'll be in Portage at their library, and this summer, I'll be in Middleton, Manitowoc, Berlin, Madison, Bailey's Harbor, Ripon, Bloomer, and maybe some other places, but those aren't finalized yet. That's just a suggestion, and many of the there are even high schools around the state that have planetariums. I don't know if they do public presentations, but I did want to mention you don't live anywhere near here, but the La Crosse, UW La Crosse, they have a planetarium, and every Saturday at 1 o'clock they have performances. Right now they're doing.
Yeah, I went to college there. They have a great planetarium.
Okay, well, and it's Bob Allen. He's still running the planetarium there, and he's in my astronomy club. And right now the emphasis is on black holes.
Cool.
So those are some ideas.
Cool. Thank you very much.
Sure. Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. And we have other callers online, but there's an open line for you at 1-800-642-1234. Give a call with your questions or comments. Let's turn to Thomas in Arborvitae next. Hi, Tom. Thank you for calling, Thomas.
Good day, gentlemen. I bought at an auction, I bought a Bushnell Voyager 570 by 60 rotary compact refractor telescope, the model 789570. I've never used it. I bought it for, I really always wanted one.
Mm-hmm.
And now by listening to your program, I feel just mentally aroused. I went under the bed, got it out.
Yeah.
I got everything is intact with the how to do, what not to, whatever.
Yeah.
And I'm just wondering if I really made a very good buy.
Well,
I didn't know nothing about them at the time.
Sure.
I only paid $65 for it.
Well, and I, you know, to me, a telescope that's worth using is the one that is sitting in front of you. I mean, if you have it, get out there and use it. From what you say about its size, I would say you should be able to see quite well details on the moon. You would be able to see the rings of Saturn, things like that. Yeah, yeah. So the thing about a lot of people, sadly, a lot of folks, they buy telescopes for Christmas, the holidays. That's when a lot of telescope sales happen, and then they just sit in the box.
Yeah.
You just take it outside, and you have a telescope that is a size where taking it outside isn't difficult. The one issue with telescopes is, you know, the bigger it is, the more you'll be able to see, but then it's bulky and heavy and doesn't get used.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, well, it's so many adjustments on it that you can mount a camera on it.
Yeah.
To take pictures. It says something that it might open a door to some very heavy enjoyment for myself.
I would say. I mean, even with your naked eye, there's so much you can see. And once you have any telescope, it really opens up the sky.
And Thomas, you're in Arborvitae. I'm betting there's an astronomy club in that area.
Mm-hmm. There's always somebody, like in our club. Not everybody is into outreach, but at our last meeting, somebody brought in a telescope that had been in a box forever. It was at least 50 years old, and three of the guys just basically left the meeting to go out in the hall and get that thing put together. So, yeah.
I sure appreciate the information, gentlemen. And,
all right.
I'm going to really get myself involved.
All right.
All right.
Good.
Good for you, Thomas. Thank you so much. And I hope he does get to one of the clubs because, as you say, they're so helpful. And he can learn so much in probably a half an hour or an hour that he would take him forever otherwise.
And I will say, it is, from what he says, it's a small telescope, but it's the telescope he has.
Yeah.
And sadly, there are some people, not in my club, don't get me wrong, but there are some people when you go online and you mention, well, I have this telescope, people immediately go, it's garbage. Well, sure, if you have $10,000 to invest in the top-of-the-line best, there are people who are going to judge anything less than that. So don't be discouraged if somebody says, that's not very good. Just use what you have.
Joe in Franklin, Thank you for calling. Hello.
Hi. What? I have a question.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Which way do the planets move through the sky from year to year?
Well, in they all go around. I'm sorry. Were you finished?
Go ahead.
They all go around the sun in the same direction. So they will move, if you look at them against the starry background, one night and then go out sometime later. You know, not the next night, you wouldn't notice. But, say, a month later, they will have moved to, they will move to the east. But I may not be getting that right because they move so slowly, it's hard to know. But as the Earth goes around the sun, it catches up and passes the planet, so then they go backwards.
Right,
they call that retrograde motion. Right. And that's one reason why it took a long, long time for people to figure out what is going on, actually. How is this all working?
Sure.
But
sure.
That is my understanding. And Mars has more, they call it the retrograde motion, than other planets because it gets so close to the Earth. So that as we whip by it, it seems to go backwards and then go forwards again.
Right.
Yeah.
So, I mean, now, like last summer, Saturn and Jupiter were out.
Yep.
And you're right about when you show somebody Saturn, they're just like, oh, my gosh. And so now this year, they would be further to the east.
Yes.
Okay.
So right now they are right in Scorpius, the Scorpion. And the sad thing is, when the planets are out in the summer, they're low in the sky. There's this line that goes around our sky called the ecliptic, and it's basically the flat disk of our solar system. And they're on that line. But in the summer, at night, when the planets are on that line, they're where the sun is in winter. So they're very low in the sky in the summer. So the best time to actually see planets is when they're out in the winter, because then they're nice and high in the sky.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. I guess that answers my question.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. You know, Kevin in Prairie Grove wanted to know what's the best nebula this time of year, and are there any star parties coming up in Wisconsin?
The only star party I know about is the one I'm doing in Ripon, and that's not till August. So there are always star parties. I know my club, they in La Crosse, and there are clubs all over the state, and you know, you can do a search for, and if you don't see results, then call the closest physics department at a college, and they will probably have somebody there who's in a club, or they can steer you towards it. And many, if not most of them, once a month or so, they will have public places, public stargazing opportunities. My club does it. Typically, we have what we call the Dark Sky Weekend, and we do it about 8 times a year. And I don't have it right in front of me, but if you were in La Crosse, you could just look up LCAAS, the La Crosse Area Astronomical Society, and right there on their homepage, they have this year's dates of when those nights will be. And I bet lots of other astronomy clubs have that, too. As far as the best nebula, the best nebula kind of period all year is the Orion Nebula. If you find Orion in the sky and look at his sword, even through a pair of binoculars, you can see a sort of mistiness. And through a telescope, it's quite detailed and amazing. And Orion is still in the sky. It's the brightest constellation in the sky at any time. And the neat thing about it is you can see it from almost everywhere people live in the world because it's right on the equator of the sky. And it will still be in the evening sky for the next month to 6 weeks, but it's getting lower every night as we go around the sun. So really by the end of April, it's very low in the sky in the west right when it gets dark. So now is the time to go see that.
Alan in Madison, your turn. Hi, Alan. Thank you for calling.
Good morning. I was just wondering, years ago, I had a friend that had a telescope, and he had a tripod that actually moved with the Earth. Am I dreaming that? Or?
No, that's my favorite kind of the tripod. Actually, and if you want to get technical, is just the legs, the three legs that hold it up. What holds a telescope? We astronomy people call the mount, and there are different kinds, but the one that's called the equatorial mount, it moves in two directions, you know, just like if you were to have a tripod up and down, back and forth. but one of its axes of motion, you aim that at the North Pole, and then you can put a motor on that axis that goes the same speed as the Earth turns, only in the opposite direction, and that will keep what you're looking at centered in the eyepiece. And frankly, if you're going to have more than one person look through a telescope, you want to get a motorized mount like that, because the higher your magnification, the quicker things are going to move out of your view if you're not following it. You can get them for, especially for smaller telescopes, motorized mounts are not that expensive.
There we go. Thanks a lot for calling. Catherine shot us a note on Facebook wondering how does the telescope the early sky explorers use compared to today's? I am in awe of what they were able to learn about the solar system.
Well, some of the first telescopes, I could talk for a long time about this, but in 1609, Galileo made a telescope. He had heard about them, and he realized, okay, I get that. And instead of, he made his own lenses and made a telescope that had a very narrow field, so he couldn't even see the whole moon at the same time. But, you know, if you aim any kind of magnification at the night sky, you're going to see so much. And in his little telescope, people wouldn't even sell a telescope with a lens as small as his nowadays. Why would you buy that? But he was able to discover craters on the moon, and that the what we called the seas on the moon were not, because there were craters in them. He realized the Milky Way was made of stars. He found the moons of Jupiter. He found that Venus had phases. He changed everything. And then people, not that long after him, they had better, much better telescopes, and then they found the Great Red Spot on Jupiter, and they found the rings of Saturn, and they saw a lot, even with the small telescope. And nowadays, if you buy a small telescope, it's going to have much better made lenses or mirrors than theirs, so you can see a lot in even a small telescope.
John in Lake Halley has something. Hi, John. Thanks for calling.
Oh, thanks for taking my call. Yeah, I got a small telescope for my son last Christmas, and it has just fallen apart. I'm wondering where I can go to find an actual good quality telescope that's not going to break the bank.
Well, I guess I have to ask you, what do you mean by break the bank? What?
Between $200-$500, something like that.
Yeah, yeah. If you do some research, you should be able to find something. The sad thing is, on the less expensive telescopes, even when they're selling you a decent telescope, they usually undermount them. The mount that they sell the telescope with isn't really sturdy enough for the telescope to give really rock solid views, and that's disappointing. But once you get up into, say, the $400 range, then you can. A company I will recommend that I think is pretty good. They have good customer service for people who actually buy telescopes from them. It's called Orion Telescopes and Binoculars. It's a mail order company in out of California. Pretty much everyone now who buys telescopes, they probably do it mail order, because very few people live near a well-stocked telescope store. If you really want to only do this once, I suggest you contact an astronomy club and go to one of their public viewings and look through their telescopes and quiz them and see what money will buy, rather than just looking at a magazine or a book, because you may be disappointed. You may find, wow, they said this would be great, and it's still really wobbly, or this is way more than I needed. So that's my
another advice. I was thinking Eagle Optics as a business. Tom Hall from Eagle Optics has been a guest on the show several times, and they're certainly a reputable firm, but there are many others, too.
Right, right.
Yeah. All right, thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Gene in Sussex, your turn. Hi, Gene.
Hi. I was just going to mention, because you mentioned about star parties.
Yeah.
That up in Waupaca, New Star out of Appleton, I think Nina Menasha, they have a star party the first week in June. And then up at Hobbs Observatory outside of Eau Claire, they have one. It's going to be the second week in August this year.
Very cool.
Excellent.
Thank you.
Sure.
Bye. Appreciate that call. And so there are some out there.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
And Dolores in Kenosha, hi.
Hi. My husband, we bought him a telescope. Oh, we probably had it in our library here for 25 years. Because unfortunately, we also had small children. And after about 3 years, somebody messed up the eyepiece. And so I've been trying to, you know, get it repaired or fixed. I, you know, every now and then I go online and find it. I don't even know if the company exists anymore.
Can you, what is the company?
It's Tasco.
Yeah, Tasco exists. And again, I'll just be honest with you. They make, they have made, if depending on how old it is, some really nice stuff and then some not so nice stuff. So, but again, it's the telescope you have.
Right. We are getting another one. So, I got to pick a gift for 45 years of service at where I work.
Excellent.
We're getting a nice telescope. So, but I'd like to get this repaired, you know, and if, you know, my family won't use it, I could donate it to, you know, a youth group or something.
Well, again, any astronomy club, somebody there, I mean, if you say they messed up the eyepiece, maybe somebody put the lenses, they took them out to clean them and put them back in the wrong order, there would definitely be somebody who could help you with that.
Yeah, you should. In Kenosha, there's bound to be an astronomy club in Kenosha or in the area. Mm-hmm. So if you go online, Dolores, again, as Paul was suggesting earlier, just go online and say astronomy clubs in Wisconsin or even astronomy clubs in Kenosha.
Yeah.
If there's one there, it's going to pop up online.
Yep. Hey, Larry, I know we're almost out of time, and I did want to mention the transit of Mercury, the planet.
Oh, we haven't even talked about that.
The planet on May 9th, starting right at about sunrise and lasting till about 1:30 in the afternoon, the planet Mercury will cross the face of the sun. Now, it's tiny. You never want to look at the sun without a proper filter, and you can learn online what that is. Mercury will be tiny. It would be best to look through a telescope with a filter on it, and I hope to have our observatory looking at that, and others will be too. So I know at Riverside Park in La Crosse, there are people from my club will be there that day. Check it out.
So that, and again, the date for that is?
May 9th, and it won't happen again in May until the year 2049. It's not that common. It happens in November, too, but November tends to be cloudier and colder. So.
Yeah, so it's not as much fun at all.
Yeah.
Well, Paul, I tell you what, it's always a great pleasure. Thank you so much for taking time to be with us today, and I hope you'll come back.
Oh, yeah. All right, thanks
and again,
a lot.
And yeah, I want to go back to the work that you do for people who might be interested in having you come with your planetarium.
Yeah, you can look for my website online. It's seeingstars.wordpress.com. And if that's too much to remember, my last name, KINZER, and Seeing Stars, and it'll take you there, and there's all sorts of information.
Yeah, all sorts of great information there. And I believe, I'm pretty sure we have you up on our Facebook page, too.
Right, and right on the page that it'll take you to now, there are some pictures I recently put up of the observatory being, you know, the process of being built.
So, oh, cool. I haven't even looked at it myself. Yeah, okay, yeah. I'm going to go to it.
All right.
Thanks, Paul.
Sure. Bye-bye.
Paul Kinzer, author of Stargazing Basics, Getting Started in Recreational Astronomy. It's published by Cambridge University Press. It's in its revised edition now. He's a member of the La Crosse Area Astronomy Club and always comes on and always does a great job. It's fun to have him with us. We are going to switch gears a little bit and talk with you, a lot, actually. Talk with the author of a new book. It's called White Dresses, a memoir of love and secrets, mothers and daughters. I can't tell you what, it's kind of a fascinating read. Coming up next with Mary Flum Peterson on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.